This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Happy Independence Day, one and all. Joining me this week to discuss the TNA Impact that aired on July 3rd is none other than Brian. Welcome back to the show, Brian.
Thank you for having me again, Chris.
I don't think we have any news and notes to get into this week. Sonata apparently got extended for a little bit longer. He will be wrestling in TNA deeper into the year than initially expected. He was expected to return to Japan and wrestle one sometime in early September, but it looks like they're going to extend his run here. I'm excited about that.
Good. I hope he learns to talk.
Well, or gets partnered with somebody who knows how to talk for him.
And I don't mean that in a bad way. Just learns English a little bit better.
Sure.
Gets a better grasp of the language. That way he can...
Well, this is how he will learn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, the TV title.
The TV title will be coming back here at some point.
No, well, as of now, Kurt Angle says it's inactive. It's not gone anymore, and it's not in a trash can. It's just inactive. So we're a step forward.
Well, then I would expect to be seeing the TV title appearing at some point later on, in a couple months maybe.
I hope.
On TV, at least. So, we begin to this week's episode with an MVP video recap, which is actually how we began last week's episode. MVP said, this is our yard. We just kind of update the MVP story, which is that Bobby Lashley, under the management of MVP, has become the world champion, has defeated Eric Young, and appears fairly unstoppable at this point. We then get Kurt Angle. He comes out and stands in the ring and says, tomorrow is Independence Day, to a Bethlehem, Pennsylvania crowd sometime in the middle of June. A little bit confusing. He says that he's got some great matches tonight, but first he needs to bring out Earl Hebner. Earl Hebner comes out. He's wearing his civilian stripes, which are horizontal. But Kurt Angle says, no, sir, you are going to put back on the vertical stripes because you are reinstated as referee. Kurt Angle then pulls out his cheat sheet and, brandishing his cheat sheet with the matches on it, says that he has some fantastic matches tonight and proceeds to list them off.
He actually said, the funny thing he said right there, he goes to start announcing the matches, and he was like, I wrote these down because I had a really tough day today. So you only thought of these matches like a couple hours ago? Is that what you're trying to... I don't know. There was a moment
Kurt
there
Angle's
where...
Kurt Angle's that kid who didn't study for the math test. He crams 30 minutes before.
Yeah, but does the best that way, I guess. I don't know.
It's true. Yeah. Joe comes out, and he says that he doesn't trust Kurt Angle. He says that Kurt Angle is no different. Kurt Angle says no, he is not going to even hear any of this because he is totally different than this. Joe says that Kurt Angle was bought and brought to TNA, but he got his credit the legit way by putting his fist through people. He earned it. Kurt Angle says that that may be true, and some days he's kicking ass, but someday Joe also half-asses. And Joe says he was rebuilding the sport of professional wrestling sometime in 2005. Or 2004, whatever, I don't know, I found that a bit confusing. Kurt Angle says that this is the Joe that he wants to see, apparently a Joe who yells at Kurt Angle a whole bunch, and Joe says, be careful what you wish for.
Right.
Even when I break it down to these bullet points, this promo didn't make a lot of sense.
He
but those
is
are the
pro
strokes.
Wrestling, and just this, they're trying to, I guess, get Kurt Angle on a new promo going towards, like, I'm not going to do the championship. I'm not going to be like MVP and book myself for a bunch of matches where I'm going to try to take the championship. What I don't understand is why they're doing it, what, maybe a year before he's even going to get in the ring?
He's not anywhere even close. Like, yeah. At this point, well, they have to renew his contract. They have contract negotiations, I'm sure, going on with Kurt Angle right now. And at this point, he's just in a management role, and he's got ACL issues, if I recall correctly.
Right, something like that.
Point being, he's months, like 3 months at least, but probably more like 6 to 9 months from even being in the ring again, or, you know, being 100% healthy, or as healthy as he's going to be at 44 years old with a number of different injuries. I found this promo weird. I didn't really know what to make of Joe. Joe came off more heely than usual, and I mean, the crowd was sort of booing him because a lot of the stuff he was saying was hostile, and Kurt Angle was basically never mean at all during this, other than when he said that Joe half-asses, which is not necessarily an unfair statement.
Not necessarily at all. Not here lately, especially. It almost would have made more sense if he'd have come out and been like, hey, you just announced all these matches. Where my name? You know, that kind of would have made sense.
That was the thing that
never
happened.
Because he wasn't in any of the matches or anything like that. So if he'd have come out and been like, dude, I thought we were boys. Where's my match? You know, I want to take somebody on. I want to get on, you know,
I am pro wrestling.
I am pro wrestling.
How come I'm not wrestling?
That would have made a lot more sense to me. But he came out and kind of attacked Kurt Angle. And where they're going, I don't know.
And he just says, be careful what you wish for. You know, okay, so if throughout the rest of this episode, people start getting ambushed in back, the people who have already been on the show and are done with their in-ring work for the week, or people who, you know, just didn't appear, you just have people getting taken out by Joe, this makes more sense. This whole promo was weird. But it wouldn't be the only weird promo package thing that kind of leaves me in a cul-de-sac that we saw tonight.
No, it won't be.
No, it won't be. We have the rude ambush by MVP and Kenny King.
MVP. Do you want to fight? How silly was that?
Do you want to fight? Yeah, I want to fight.
MVP on his crutches to Bobby Roode. You want to fight? You want to fight? Come on. Come on then. Come on. I'll fight you now. I'll fight.
And a way too angry Bobby Roode, who should have been like, what are you doing, crutch guy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's your problem?
No, Bobby Roode was just too angry to even think about the fact that, like, MVP's on crutches. What's he going to do?
Yeah.
This guy's not really that close to throwing down. How credible is his threat? I would say, yeah, I'm down to fight. Catch me. And then just kind of like, you know,
yeah,
move fairly quickly.
Come on, hop along.
Yeah.
Get me.
So, anyways, he gets ambushed by Kenny King.
Of course.
Who, you know, goes to town, and then MVP gets some crutch work in. Good old crutch work. Then we get another segment where Angle and Bobby Roode are together. Roode is now icing down his shoulder injury, which he is selling, and Roode is contrite for the past. He is sorry about being so aggressive to Kurt Angle. Kurt Angle says he respects Bobby Roode, and Bobby Roode says that he wants a match with Kenny King.
No. He said he wants a match with MVP.
He does, but then he comes around and says that he's...
No, not till later on. Later on, actually, that whenever... Because Kurt Angle actually offers the fight with MVP. He's like, all right, MVP, get in there. And MVP's like, come on, dude.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You, of all people, understand.
Didn't Roode say that he wanted both of them?
At one point.
Yeah, I don't know. I got confused.
Really
here.
Awkward. But, I mean, just the whole Roode going and narking to the... principle, you know, that was really awkward, with him supposed to be coming back in as this big badass. Why are you kind of taking the puss way that, you know, nobody, your mom even tells you when you're a kid, you know, you don't tattletale, you know what I mean? Like, you don't just go do
I sort of get that Bobby Roode would need to have a match made, and the way you're going to get the match made is by going to Kurt Angle, and then Kurt Angle goes, why do you want the match? I don't know. I didn't find that to be the logical disconnect here, just because in order for this match to occur, Bobby Roode has to go to an authority figure and request the match, and it's sort of, it'd be weird for the authority figure to be like, why do you want this match? Because, like, at least there's some logical consistency later on when Austin Aries goes and talks to Kurt Angle.
Right.
And Kurt Angle, you know, wants to know why Austin Aries wants his match.
It does kind of set the plate for that.
Sure. There's some consistency here. Anyways, we get the Bromans versus the Wolves versus the Menagerie in a triangle tag match. And in this case, the Menagerie is represented by Nux and the Freak. There is a crazy DJZ spot that happens really early in this match. This should have been put a little bit later, but DJZ gets some serious air here.
It's got to be... how high is just a ring? I want to say about 3.5 feet.
I don't know.
Just to the apron.
I
somewhere
know.
Around 3.5 feet, if I had to guess, because it's about hip height for these guys.
Yeah, it could be 4 feet, maybe.
And then you got to think Nux and the Freak are about over 6 feet.
Mm-hmm.
So that's about 10 feet right there.
Yeah.
And then they throw him up a good three, four feet?
Over their heads.
About 3 feet or
yeah,
so?
Yeah, I would say that, like...
That's like 13 feet.
Yeah.
That's my math on that. That's 13 feet. That's crazy, man.
It was a crazy spot. Really crazy spot. The psychology, though, is kind of thin in this match. There is a cool little spinebuster backstabber by the Bromance, who are, in this case, DJZ and Jesse Godertz.
They have a nice hold with Freak at the beginning.
Yeah, he does the suspending of one of the wolves, and the other wolf comes in, and then they kind of get double suplexed. That looked all right.
I was more impressed with just holding him, and then whenever the other wolf came in for a minute, I think it was Davey came in, and he kicks him like two or three times before he even drops the guy. That was impressive. That adds to the mystique of Freak. Also, Freak's got a new mask.
Yeah, like he has several masks.
yeah.
Apparently, he's
as
got,
we find out
he,
later.
You might say he has a mask menagerie.
Yeah.
See what I did there? See what I did there?
A virtual cornucopia.
So here's my note. TNA, more is more. Give me just 10 to 15 minute matches with the Wolves versus one of these teams. Albeit the menagerie represented by, let's say, the Freak and Crazy Steve, where Crazy Steve takes a pin from one of the Wolves, or you have the Bromans have a match against the Wolves. I would rather just see a legit tag match, because these three-way tag matches are weird, because there's one team who's always just sort of standing outside, and the question gets begged, why are they, like, why would a team tag the neutral team?
Yeah, and
why wouldn't you just tag your partner?
And they call it a triple threat match in the beginning. That's what Kurt Angle announces it as. So if it's a triple threat match, there's really only two threats in the ring at any given time. And then another...
It would make a lot more sense if you had three guys in the ring, and yeah, they're having a triple threat match in which you can tag out.
Yeah, and they've done this match, like we were saying, or we had talked about earlier, there's maybe three of these matches within the last 2 months.
And
they're never explained very well. You don't get Taz kind of telling you, well, this is what happens in these kind of type of matches. You have to try to keep that other guy out, you know, because...
Was this a title match?
I don't know. I mean, the Wolves win, right. It doesn't matter. No, but
Taz never mentioned anything like, you know, the Wolves can lose this match without ever getting pinned.
Right.
So...
Which they wouldn't have, because virtually all the work is done by
the Wolves.
Bromans and Wolves.
The Menagerie are definitely the team looking from the outside in.
The whole time.
Just a weird match. I did not like this match.
Yeah. I did like the little Menagerie touch with the guys out on the stilts.
Yes.
In the red, white, and blue. People. You pointed that out. That
you know,
was neat.
If you're going to have the people on the stilts, you might as well have them dress up like Uncle Sam
for
the 4th
really
of July
sell
edition.
To this audience that it's the 4th of July. Let them know. It's the 4th of freaking July.
And there's put Rebel in a bikini.
Yeah.
That patriotic
a red, white,
bikini.
And blue bikini. Yeah.
And later Britney as well.
Thank you.
Yeah. So, moving on, we get Rude in the back with Angle, and they are at MVP and Kenny King's locker room.
Right, yeah, this is where that happened.
Yes. And they're going to have a match. MVP says, hey man, my knee isn't working well. You understand, Kurt Angle, you got a bad knee. And Kurt Angle, I guess, is just okay with this. And so, Kenny King says, I'll have a match with you, and we can fight in regular clothes. And so, Kurt Angle makes a regular clothes stipulation match. Wherein
or the street match,
street what? Fight.
Street
they're
fight.
Dressing in. They're fighting in their street clothes.
Yeah, that's what it was.
Kenny King's the street that Kenny King walks on is a funny street, I guess. And Bobby Roode's street is a street wherein you don't wear a shirt. So, two different types of streets. That's what I'm trying to say here. So we go down. Bobby Roode is selling his shoulder. His hand is taped up. As if he's selling his hand, but it's supposed to be his shoulder that's injured. I don't have a lot of notes about this. This is a generic brawl thing.
Here's
for
something that
like 5 minutes.
Something that I did find odd. They didn't use an announcer at all. Bobby Roode comes in first, no announcer, no nothing, and announces that he wants Kenny King to come out to a match that we've already seen made. But it was really awkward to not have an announcer, because then Kenny King comes out.
And says, you really want this?
Yeah, are you ready for this? Are you sure?
He's
and MVP's
the
there, and Kurt Angle comes out and makes MVP leave.
Kurt Angle comes out and makes MVP leave. Thank
That's
you for
important.
That's important, because that is not going to be consistently followed
not,
up
yeah,
with throughout this.
It actually becomes really odd later on, but anyway, he does come out and he plays the you know, good guy angle. Come on, MVP, we're going to do things the right way. Get out of here. They're going to have a fair street fight.
Right.
Which then ensues immediately on the ramp.
Right. And Kenny King is throwing stuff at Bobby Roode's injured shoulder.
Yeah.
Weapons are legal. It's okay to use weapons. MVP, on the other hand, has no place at ringside because fairness reasons.
Because Obama. Correct.
Because Obama.
Yes. That's the reason for all things.
You're always bringing these conspiracies.
I'm sorry. Wrong show.
You know, wrong show. It's all right. But this thing goes on. It's a lot of brawling on the outside. Tanay and Taz seem to forget that this is not a match yet, and I don't think anybody...
I forgot as well, because nobody really identified the rules.
I understand the rules of this. I understand that the rules are that they had to come down wearing the clothes that they were wearing, and that they had to have a quote-unquote street fight, however that's defined. I'm not...
I mean, basically the way that they acted like it was going to be defined was like, hey, they're fighting all over the place. And that's what I thought the match was going to be. Because I'm taking notes. I'm like, hey, this guy's on the second level. I think he was supposed to, like, jump off from here.
Yeah, there's that.
I think there's something
stuff
that's supposed to happen here. And I'm doing all these notes and everything. And then it comes to them actually making it to the ring, and the bell goes off. And you're like, oh.
The match doesn't start until they're both in the ring.
Yeah.
Which is something that TNA does sometimes. It's not completely inconsistent with the product overall. Yeah. It's just confusing, and the best way I could describe a street fight rules, at least as I understand them from seeing them presented, it is a hardcore match, however, it is not a false count anywhere match. It is falls have to happen in the ring.
Something to that effect, right.
But there's no disqualification because it's a hardcore match, which begs the question, why can't, you know, MVP or Bobby Lashley come out and interfere?
But.
So... a bigger note for me in this match is that Kenny King really should have won this match. Yes, Kurt Angle sent away MVP, but what should have happened to show that MVP is pulling these strings and he is smarter than Kurt Angle is that Bobby Lashley comes out, makes the save. Additionally, Kenny King needs wins.
At least one.
He hasn't won a single match yet, and you could have had him go over Bobby Roode clean, selling the shoulder injury.
Right, the shoulder injury that is not an injury.
That Bobby Roode just sort of effortlessly overcomes.
Right, well, yeah, it's not a reported injury. I looked around on the net and everything. It's not like a real reported injury.
No,
this is just some faked injury for the match and everything.
Yeah,
so that's fine.
Why
not go ahead and use that to your advantage and say that Kenny King wins, blah, blah, blah. And he comes really close.
We see the Kenny King finisher that we have yet to see.
The Schminisher.
Yeah.
I don't know. Whatever it might be.
Kenny finisher? I don't know.
It looks like it's going to be an F5 to me. I'm still stuck on that. I still think that's where it's going, but I don't know.
I have no way. It could be finish off like in a DDT. I have yet to see this finisher, so I have no way of really telling.
Yeah.
Maybe there's an episode of Explosion where he wrestles someone like Tigre Uno or something.
I've seen quite a few.
I don't know. I'm opining out loud here. So let me see if I've got any other notes. There's a JTG sign in the crowd. I wonder if we're going to get Crime Time later in the year in TNA because they can actually use the name Crime Time. They can't use the Y, and why would they? They just go with Crime Time.
Yeah.
And
simplify.
Totally work over in TNA, and TNA needs a tag team.
Yeah. I mean, it was a decent match, I guess. It wasn't wrestling. It was a bunch of brawling all over the place, and then I try my finisher, I don't hit it. You hit your finisher.
Bobby Roode hits the Roode Bomb, which is not even a power bomb like maneuver. It's actually like a Death Valley driver.
Yeah, something like that.
Like the Death Valley, it goes from a fireman's carry position and finishes in a neck breaker. That's not it's like damn close to a Death Valley driver. All right. Anyways, EC3 backstage, he's cutting a promo saying how he's never going to get bothered. I just have that EC3 is very much in a chill mood because he was very chill.
Yeah, he seemed, and he handles these little promos and stuff. He handles the. He's so good at what he does.
No, he does everything.
It's really funny watching him.
He's very, very solid. There's no getting around it.
I mean, I'm not gonna. I'm never going to go through a table. My mom or my my aunt's never going to go through a table.
And they say it
once
so many times. It's eventually going to happen, but it's going to be a cool payoff when it happens.
Yeah, it'll be fun.
Afterwards, Rude is selling his shoulder like in the match. Let me see. Why do I have that down there?
Because he cuts another promo, right? Yeah, he goes
backstage and cuts another one. Bobby Roode is backstage a shitload in this episode. That's why I have this written down.
Yeah, they're really throwing him out there to talk as much as possible.
Oh, and he wants to be Bobby Lashley and become the world champion. So he's going to be in the hunt for Bobby Lashley. And Austin Aries is going to go meet with Kurt Angle. This whole little segment's just to set up that there are a lot of people who want a shot at Bobby Lashley.
Yeah.
And Bobby Lashley's going to get a shot at all of them eventually here.
Right.
Austin Aries comes, meets with Kurt Angle, explains to Kurt Angle for about a paragraph why he's totally awesome. He's really cool. He's really, really cool. And he's probably even cooler than Kurt Angle.
Yeah.
Which is totally how you want to butter up someone. Yeah. Like, if I wanted something from my boss, I would go in there and be like, look, hey, you know I'm cool. You know that I'm, like, even probably cooler than you.
Can I have something?
So you should probably give me something. Because, like, you might want to give yourself something. But, like, think about it. If I'm really cool, shouldn't I have something?
Before you get something, shouldn't I have it?
You can't even get something right now because you're hurt. So I should get something.
The funny thing to me is, can we give Kurt Angle an office? A desk?
Yeah, Kurt Angle
he's
just
sitting
walks
on a road
around.
Box. He's sitting on a road case in the back. That's all it is. And they just kind of have this little meeting, this little powwow back there. No, in the middle of nothing. No office. No, I don't know. Let's give him a desk. It'd be neat.
He just wanders around backstage.
Yeah. He's a very active manager.
He is. Very active manager.
As we'll see.
So anyways, Austin Aries wants a shot at Sonata next week because he's never gotten his rematch for the X Division title. And, oh, by the way, at this point, we, the TNA viewing audience, have never seen Austin Aries lose the title to Sonata because that was over in Japan, and the only thing that's been available is Wrestle 1's broadcast of that match.
Right. So unless you went out and hunted it down on your own, you didn't find it on Spike TV.
No, they show pictures on Spike TV.
Right. But you didn't see it.
No, you didn't
see
it.
So, I mean, that'll be cool.
Because they've apparently recut that Wrestle 1 show with their own commentary, I can only assume. Because the Wrestle 1 show has been available, but that's with the Japanese commentary, and I'm assuming that they have edited down heavily what the Wrestle 1 thing was, because like there's a lot of pre-show stuff and pre-show interviews, and I don't think there'd be any way for them like subtitle it. They want to get these things down to 3 hours generally.
Right.
Those one-night-only things. All right, where are we?
Well, this is Brittany.
Brittany.
Brittany's about to go in the
yeah.
ring.
Oh, yeah. Austin Aries wants to get the X Division title because he wants to use option C.
Right.
And that's his whole path to getting at Bobby Lashley.
Right.
So we now get Brittany and Madison. They're in the ring. Brittany calls out Madison, says she wants to talk to Madison. Madison says that things have gone way beyond out of control.
Yeah, and she's willing to go ahead and fight.
Yes.
And if this is what it takes to get it over with, I'll fight you.
But Brittany doesn't want to fight.
No.
She says that the Knockouts division is very complicated. And it's easy to understand why this is complicated, because you got her, you got Madison, you got Gail Kim, you have the beautiful people, Shmurly Buckinson, Dammy Turley.
Yeah. That Kate girl.
Ringo.
Yeah.
Yeah, Ringo Baltrez.
Yeah. Larry's sister.
Yeah, Larry's sister. They used to have ODB. I don't know. She's somewhere.
She might still be around. Yeah, but, yeah. I mean, point being, there's
don't
like five
Don't sleep on Bucky
people.
Turleson. That's what
Bucky
I'm saying.
Bucky Turleson's a nice wrestler.
Yeah, she's good.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. There's like five people.
Yeah.
That's my point.
It's really complicated, though.
All right. Brittany says that she wanted to be like Madison. And she says that she's sorry and that she's learned things.
Yeah.
Madison says, okay, she's sorry too. And she's going to be there now to help Brittany navigate the three other people that are in the division that they are in.
Right.
Brittany says what she's learned is never meet your heroes. Because apparently Brittany grew up a huge Madison Rain fan.
Yeah, I guess so. Because she's way young. I don't know.
They're approximately the same age. If anything, Madison just had the kid, so we'd assume she's slightly older.
Yeah, right? I haven't looked up a bio, but I'm guessing she's a little bit older.
I don't have these things available. Brittany hits Madison with a big clothesline. I definitely have that as a note.
Yeah, that was nice.
That was nice.
She really turns around. She turned around an opinion today, or in this episode for me. Just because I really haven't had much respect for her. I've hoped that she'll do well because I think she's really cute and stuff like that. And I hope that there's more knockouts to be able to challenge Gail Kim at some point. But she came and did some heel work today. That was awesome.
Right. And actually, if you're going to keep Gail Kim a face, it's good to have Brittany as the heel. You can have Brittany going after... That puts a different spin on the Gail Kim-Brittany program, which they've already done, where Gail Kim is the heel and Brittany was the face. And Gail Kim's pretty easily beaten Brittany on a few occasions, but Brittany actually does have one win over Gail Kim. So right. Looking way down the line, there's a program for that. Obviously, first we have a Brittany and Madison Rain match next week, which we could have just had this week if Brittany, you know...
If she just said yes.
She just said yes at the top of this.
She just decided to have her own match, basically. Like, I'll have the match when I'm ready, and I'm ready now.
And Brittany has a reverse DDT, which she debuts. So I'm hoping we get to see a little bit more of the reverse DDT. Sting's been gone long enough where it can be brought back.
Especially by a knockout.
Yes.
Nobody can get really upset about that. You know what I mean?
Like, no, I like that spot. So that was cool. All right. Bully Ray backstage sort of does promo work 101 here. He knows that he's got a match with EC3 next, and this is obviously weeks in advance or even like days after they've taped this thing, and Bully Ray delivers a perfect textbook promo.
Right.
Nothing special, but like it's textbook, and if you want to learn how to cut a generic promo or you want just a good promo to point to that's like, this is solid work.
He even introduces his own match.
Yep.
Yeah. He goes out to the... He basically says, all right, after this.
Right, after this.
Yeah.
After this commercial
message. I can't remember
message.
What the wording was, but he basically says at the very end of it, after this, and then walks off camera, and you're done. And, I mean, that's... Yeah, you're right. Yeah, 101. Perfect.
Well, it was just really textbook perfect.
Yeah.
It wasn't, didn't compel me. Just... Good. Very good. Bully Ray comes out, says to Ethan Carter, I'm going to fuck you up. There are a number of big slaps to Ethan Carter during this tables match. EC3 sells like crazy for this giant Bully Ray control section, which goes on all the way until Bully goes to get the tables. At which point, Ethan Carter kind of regains some control, and Bully Ray starts to get a bit of a comeback. Ethan Carter has Bully Ray in the corner and is mounting him for 10 punches. When Bully Ray hooks the legs, and it looks like we're going to get a powerbomb, out comes Rockstar Spud. Rockstar Spud gets Bully with the low blow. Out comes Rhino. Oh boy, this is Bully Ray's friend, so we think. It looks like Rhino's going to gore Rockstar Spud, but instead of goring Rockstar Spud, he gets Rockstar Spud in the corner, pats Rockstar Spud, kind of tells him everything's okay, and then gores the hell out of Bully Ray, who sells it like he gets shot. And at that point, Ethan Carter comes back in and does a really, really, really sloppy spinebuster choke slam.
I'm not even going to give that a name. It was
just awful.
And EC3 is better than that. He would probably look at it and be like, "Damn it! Oh, I missed that."
I mean, just do a basic suplex, man.
Right,
a regular snap.
There
suplex.
Were a bunch of different things he could have done. But
simple vertical suplex.
Yeah.
Have Rhino help you with a power bomb. That would have made some sense. Instead, Rhino's kind of just standing there and staring. And here's a question: where's Kurt Angle?
I don't know. It seems like he probably should have come out and told somebody to leave at some point.
To quote Madison Rain, things got way beyond out of control out there.
Yeah, no, it did.
Way beyond out of control.
And here's the other part of that, the other half of that. Taz kept trying to sell that, ref can't do anything. Ref can't do anything. I know Rockstar Spud just came in and hit him in the nuts, but, like, can't say anything, can't do anything about it. It was a tables match. I figure tables match means you go through a table, it's over. That's kind of, you don't have to pin anybody. I didn't know that it meant that you could have multiple people come in and fight on your behalf.
Well, okay, so let's assume it isn't, and I believe that most times when TNA does these tables matches or notice qualification, even then...
Just
Kurt Angle, where is he? Because he just came out in another no disqualification match.
Right, earlier, and took out MVP.
And took out MVP, even though, again, theoretically, that should be legal under no disqualification rules.
Right.
But and that's fine, but like maybe Kurt Angle saying, I want no outside interference. Why wouldn't he want that with Ethan Carter, who is the guy who put Kurt Angle on the shelf? Kurt Angle was on the sidelines because of Ethan Carter.
Exactly, exactly.
And Kurt Angle even said earlier in the show, this is the match he's particularly interested in.
And what's, yeah, I don't know. I don't understand. He should have come out and said something to Rockstar Spud at least and drug him out.
Sure.
Or,
but the second Rockstar Spud comes out, that's when Kurt Angle should be getting distracted by Rockstar Spud. And while
and
Kurt
Rhino
Angle
does something
and
stupid.
Rhino comes in while Kurt Angle is distracted. So
right.
Kurt Angle doesn't look like a goof. The Rhino thing is sudden, and you don't know if Rhino is going to get Ethan Carter or Bully Ray, but you have this plausible deniability thing for Kurt Angle. I don't know. This was just lazy writing. I did not like this. I did not like the finish of this match from the awful chokeslam / spinebuster thing to this spot. Silly. I mean, I know what we're getting coming up here, and that's going to be cool.
Yeah, cool. Rhino.
There's a better way to get there, is
right.
My point. There was a
cleaner
way.
It's nice
way.
To see Rhino. Nice to see Rhino doing things. He, you know, great gore.
We'll see
doesn't
what,
quite look like
I'm
the
reserving
same Rhino.
Judgment on Rhino until I see the next
yeah.
episodes.
Yeah.
So, Bobby Roode tells...
Oh, fourth spot.
What?
Isn't this like his fourth spot now? Behind the backstage, Bobby Roode
yeah,
is now...
Yeah, this is another Bobby Roode segment.
It's another Bobby Roode.
Bobby Roode all over the backstage, man.
I know.
The new Bobby Roode talks a lot.
It's the Bobby Roode talk show, TNA.
Bobby Roode is telling Eric Young that this is his night. Eric Young's confidence is shaken, and he begins to cite the statistics and figures and the odds against him. He's lost three times to Bobby Lashley. I guess he doesn't count winning the cage match with Bobby Lashley and Austin Aries as a victory over Bobby Lashley, but hey, you know, whatever. The record books would show it as one. I don't know. This is confusing. What's even more confusing is Bobby Roode goes, yeah, but tell me the story about Eric Young. And then Eric Young proceeds to explain all the times he's overcome the odds. And really, basically says a whole bunch of stuff that Bobby Roode should have been telling Eric Young as his friend. Because Eric Young has to look at Bobby Roode and go, hey, you know, I'm not so bad. I beat you as a wrestler. Which makes Bobby Roode look kind of stupid here.
Right.
And Bobby Roode's like, yeah, yeah, you beat me. And anyways, Eric Young's confidence miraculously comes back from a pep talk he gives himself. Bobby Roode says he is going to be down ringside to make sure there's no shenanigans from MVP.
Yeah, he's going to make sure.
He's going to make sure.
Because they don't have a director of operations.
There's not a guy who could guarantee a clean match.
Yeah.
Bobby Roode's going to have to do it himself. Justice is broken down across the land. All right, we get a Rhino segment. Rhino says that he's going to do whatever stuff he wants to do because he wants to do it. And no one's going to tell him otherwise. And that's the end of that
and
promo.
And that's it.
That's it.
I mean, that's it.
Sometimes he just does stuff, man.
Yeah, I do what I want.
I do what I want.
When
I'm
I want
Rhino.
I'm
a Rhino. That's what Rhinos do. Whatever they want.
You go, bro.
You run into things. We get a Sam Shaw recap that I actually thought was pretty good. The video editing and everything is neat. Suggests that there is still dark undertones bubbling underneath Sam Shaw despite the new reformed Sam Shaw. And then we get that contrasted with this backstage segment, which I didn't like. However, I think it serves the purpose of leaving us, the viewer, confused as to whether Sam Shaw's got his demons under control or does not have his demons under control and is going to double cross Gunner.
Right. And he kind of I mean, it's definitely supposed to make you, what is Shaw okay? Is he, it's supposed to make you guess on him. The thing is, it is, I don't know exactly where they're leading with it. Are they going to be a tag team now?
Surely. I'm guessing we're at least going to get some Gunner and Sam Shaw tag team. Part of his rehabilitation in the ring has to be being supervised by Gunner.
Right. But then, okay. So, but they introduced Anderson back into the fray on this, and they're like, okay, Anderson's like, oh, I don't like it. This doesn't, I chased him off once. I don't, it took me forever to do it back then. I don't want to deal with this creepy bastard again.
Like, this whole thing is weird. I mean, this whole storyline really, you have to kind of tune out the fact that this is completely not the way any sort of psychiatric rehabilitation would be done for someone who has had, like, a disconnect from society. Like, Bo Bergdahl this week, you know, he is going through slow rehabilitation and is just now getting to go, like, grocery stores and video stores and small supervised things off the base, slowly transitioning back to civilian life.
Yeah. Whereas, hasn't been released to Hillbilly Jim.
This would be like if you released Bo Bergdahl back to the Taliban and brought him back to Afghanistan for active duty again. Sam Shaw had his break from society and reality and from social norms in TNA. And I don't know any psychiatric board that would ever advise going back to a job site wherein this happened.
Right.
If you had a mental breakdown playing baseball, they probably wouldn't have you go back to playing baseball unless you had a really big contract that you had to finish honoring. But you get what I'm saying.
No, I understand.
This is the last place. This would be the place years later that he would come back to, where he'd be like, you know, it's been 5 years since I had my mental break, and I think I'm finally ready to step back into the ring. Not part of the healing process is going to be getting into that ring and just getting back on that horse again.
Well, you know, you gotta challenge your fears, man. You gotta get in there and just take it on. And I don't know. I mean, I'm just more concerned with... I actually kind of like the weirdness of the stories and everything like that with the Sam Shaw character. The stuff that they're doing to try to heat it up before he gets back in the ring, I don't have a problem with that. I'm just kind of wondering where they're going to go.
My other problem with this particular backstage segment is I thought they just tried to cover way too much ground too quickly.
Yeah, this definitely
should have been at minimum two different segments.
Well, they didn't have them in the last two shows.
No,
therefore...
I know, but like, okay, so I'll try to, I'm going to do the recap here and try to figure out where I would put the breaks. So, we're backstage, Gunnar is talking to Sam Shaw, he's like, does it feel good to get back in? And Sam Shaw goes, it feels weird now, and they're talking, and they run into Kurt. I would actually stop right there. That would be at the top of the show.
Yeah.
Later on, they're still talking. You know, they're getting some food backstage. You see, maybe I even have like him like run into some crew, TNA crew people, and they're a little freaked out. And Sam Shaw's like just saying I'm sorry and trying to be contrite. And then they would bump into a freaked out Ken Anderson, who is freaked out to see Sam Shaw. And Gunnar has to explain to Ken Anderson, hey man, you know all my war stories, including the one about my buddy who had his leg blown off in the war and then went to a psychiatric ward, but people gave him a chance to come back. So, like, let's talk about how Sam Shaw and a military veteran who got injured in a war is not an apples-to-apples comparison.
Well, it's not. It's not at all. And what this really was like, you know how sometimes you go and you see, I remember like going to see my grandpa a long time ago, and like I would go in and I would say something about something that was going on with me, and I'd get some story about something that had absolutely nothing
this
to do.
This is just like the Great Depression.
Right.
You would put on boxes on your shoes.
Yeah, and this is what it sounds like to me, because Mr. Anderson comes in and he's like, hey, I don't like this dude, and chased him off. Let's not have him around anymore. He's a creepy bastard.
He's a creepy bastard.
Hey, wait a second. My friend lost his leg, dude. Wait a second.
You know that I have told you that my friend lost his leg.
Yeah, my
and
friend
went
lost
crazy,
his leg.
And people gave him a chance.
Right.
So you should probably give, you know, Sam Shaw a chance.
Oh, yeah.
If anything, it would make more sense if Gunnar tapped into the fact that he had kind of broken away and he has the PTSD, because we've talked about that on the show before.
That would make a little bit more sense.
It would be a much stronger argument than mentioning some unnamed third party who we're never going to see on camera, who may or may not have had success in his rehabilitation into society.
No, he died.
Did he die?
Yeah, he said his friend that died and lost his leg. Died and lost his leg.
Yeah, but people gave him a chance to get back
people
into
gave
society
him a
before he died.
I don't know.
Suicide rates are
who
really
knows?
High but, off of things like that.
And then after that, I guess Mr. Anderson kind of like forces the issue. He's like, hey, we're going to go talk to Christy Hemme now.
Right.
And we're going to force this.
And what's weird is the shift. So this should be a cut right here. Ken Anderson says, that's fine. Then there's someone I want to see you talk to. Cut. So now we have two cuts. This should be at least two segments. Then we get to the third one where Ken Anderson brings Sam Shaw and Gunnar to Christy Hemme. This should be its own segment. But what's weird about this is Ken Anderson has had this complete sea change, and he's even kind of come around on Sam Shaw.
Yeah, he said, what does he say?
Sam says he's different now. I actually don't have the words.
And Anderson, he escorts him in there to talk to Christy Hemme, and then he's like, hey, I know, you're freaking out because Sam Shaw's here. Just trust me.
Hear him
trust
out.
Gunnar. Trust Gunnar.
Weird.
And that is just really weird. He does kind of have this weird change all of a sudden, and then they get the,
The logic is weird, but beyond all of this, Christy Hemme probably needs some psychiatric help after being stalked by Sam Shaw. And, like, how fucking patently irresponsible is it to reintroduce this aggressor, this male aggressor, only in the world of TNA?
Yeah.
Well, or just in the world of wrestling. I'm not letting WWE, who throws people in shit puddles, on their way out the door.
Yeah, let's not let them off the hook there.
That stuff smells disgusting. Anyways.
Well.
All right, so
they get the apology.
Sam Shaw offers a seemingly contrite and earnest apology. Anderson and Christy don't know how to feel about the scenario.
Well, and awkwardly, like, Sam Shaw just gives the apology. He does the apology, which sounds pretty sincere and everything, but then it's just an immediate walk away.
Yep.
No, you know, he does that, which keeps you guessing. It's cool, thanks.
And he keeps a stone face going
out. Sam Shaw might have done a better job than anybody else in this whole promo.
That is so totally true. The person who actually makes as much as this works, and I would not say it totally works, as much as this works, it works because Sam Shaw is very kind of consistent in his presentation of the character.
Right. He's
the Sam Shaw character
awkward.
Is presented very awkward and is the most plausible actually out of everyone.
Yeah. During that situation it was.
Yeah. It's just weird.
It was a really weird spot. A lot of bad things about it, man. And there was no Rude.
There's no Bobby Roode.
Bobby Roode.
Maybe we should have run into Bobby Roode. Bobby Roode's like, that guy? Well, I was suspended. That guy was a madman. Because Bobby Roode seems to kind of always be one notch more up than he needs to be.
He is always on that level.
He's always on that edge. Nux is backstage with the menagerie, and Nux says that the creditors keep calling and that they need money and that the freak doing flexing is not going to help. And you know what? Nux really should get on the freak. Where are all these masks coming from? Because the freak keeps having new masks.
I know. They cost money.
They've got to cost money.
Yeah.
And they're not winning matches. So that is putting them in the red, as far as I can tell.
Right.
He tries to reason with Crazy Steve. Crazy Steve's crazy, though. Reason doesn't really apply.
Right. They've got a lot of work to do. I don't know. It was just a...
I don't know where we're going coming out of this.
Maybe a creditor will show up at some point, and it's like this big, huge... I don't know. I have no idea.
And Rebel inserts the word hell into her statement. Like, it's just weird. It'd be like... And they... We sure as hell do.
Yeah.
It could have just been we sure do instead, but she adds in as hell. And it didn't.
It was an awkward one. It didn't flow well off her tongue.
That's not the way someone would say that, and it's certainly not something that she is used to saying.
Yeah, I don't know. Strange little spot.
There's
a lot of masks. That's the weirdest thing that I took from the entire
spot.
He has
a lot of masks, man.
It's honestly,
he's got a good
mask. I like
mask.
This mask though.
He's
like
got,
this weird
this
gray
is the
one.
Insecty mask.
Yeah,
and the other one's more of like the executioner, like metal. Yeah, metal knight. Sort of mask.
Yeah, red and black and kind of, weird looking.
So we get our big belt match for the night. This is Gail Kim versus Angelina Love with Velvet Sky. Oh, actually, I left out the Beautiful People with Stifler because they have this whole segment backstage where the Beautiful People are meeting with Stifler and, trying to get Stifler to referee the match. He's already got the match cleared by Hebner, who was reinstated by Kurt Angle just earlier in the show. So, somewhere between Kurt Angle reinstating Hebner and Kurt Angle's next appearance,
within Stifler, that hour and 15 minutes or so.
Stifler went, met with Hebner, said, I really want to be in this Beautiful People match. And for whatever reason, in Hebner's crazy mind, as if he was not involved in the finish at Slammiversary at all, Hebner's like, yeah, you know what? Sure, why not? You've been calling these matches right down the middle. So Kurt Angle, after this whole Stifler thing, wherein Stifler tells the Beautiful People that he is going to be refereeing their match, Kurt Angle finds Stifler and tells Stifler, hey, guess what? You're not refereeing the match. I got a different ref for the match.
Yeah, they're making you look like an idiot, dude. You can't do this anymore.
Making you look so stupid.
Yeah.
But he's not fired.
No.
He's not fired.
No.
Not
he's just not
suspended.
Taking that match.
He's just not doing that match.
I'm still in your corner, but you're going to have to His work tone harder, was all I guess. I don't know. It was odd.
I mean, Stifler's more than just a hapless dupe. He's trying to make a power play on Hebner.
Right.
And he has also not been calling matches down the middle, which is the fundamental thing in being a ref. If you're not doing that, you're not doing your job.
But they took the first step, and they just pulled him out. And then that was Kurt, and they made Kurt look good in that moment
as well.
Maybe
TNA disciplinary process requires that first you have to pull the employee aside and have the documented conversation.
You have to have the
verbal
warning.
And then next
warning,
time he's... Yeah, the verbal warning.
Then the written.
The written.
And then you're fired. I don't know.
I don't know. Confusing. So that basically cancels out Stifler refereeing the match. Brian Hebner's going to be refereeing the match. But Kurt Angle is totally fine with Velvet Sky coming down to the ring, which is weird, because if Kurt Angle's been watching the matches enough to know that Stifler has not been a good referee, he might have maybe noticed that Velvet Sky has been cheating rampantly throughout these matches, you would think.
Yeah, she's been keeping... I mean, that's kind of the heel thing. They've been together...
Yeah, she's been doing the hairspray finish.
Yeah,
the hairspray
Britney, she's been the one doing the heavy lifting.
Yo Kim.
Yeah. Exactly. She's won these matches for Angelina Love, period.
Or done the setup for Angelina to get the Botox and... Yeah, but Angelina wins with a big assist from Velvet Sky.
Right.
It's just weird that Kurt Angle doesn't notice any of that.
I actually had a Velvet counter on this match that I was trying to keep track of how many times she interferes.
What did your counter get before she got suspended?
Four.
Yeah, because at one point there's a really good clothesline by Velvet.
Yeah.
Hebner misses... This is the weirdest sequence. Brian Hebner misses Velvet Sky interfering in the match by grabbing Gail Kim's foot through the ropes. Hebner turns around to see Gail Kim grabbing Velvet Sky and pulling Velvet Sky up by her hair, and then Velvet Sky breaks this, you know, pulling up into the ring with a, you know, like a stun gun or a stunner sort of using the rope
right
back to the outside. This is what makes Brian Hebner throw out Velvet Sky. But he missed the first segment and the key segment, which would have been Velvet Sky as the aggressor to begin with. Just sloppy. Velvet Sky gets thrown out.
Yeah, it basically looks like Velvet Sky gets thrown out because Gail Kim was attacking her.
Right.
That's what it looks like in that moment. I know that's not what they were aiming for. I know that's not what it really means, but that's what it looked like. It was odd.
That's how it comes off. Gail Kim starts taking control of this match. Gail Kim's doing some high spots. Gail Kim goes up to the top for another high spot, one high spot too many, and Angelina goes for a Botox injection that barely gets Gail Kim.
I mean, was it even... It didn't even really look like the boat...
They call it like one.
I know. It looked like it was supposed to be something else, and she kind of missed it and just went for the old, I know how to do this trick.
The jumping front kick that she does just doesn't... she doesn't get a lot of vertical on it. It doesn't go very high, and I don't know.
It doesn't impress me.
I'm not a big Angelina fan. I'm really not. So I didn't. The finish with Gail Kim winning this belt was sort of welcome. I'm glad to see her as the champion.
Yeah, definitely.
But first, Gail Kim spills outside, and they are showing this like it's a giant bump. And theoretically, it should be, because it is someone getting hit with a finisher that is sending them from the top ropes to the outside.
Right.
So they call this spot appropriately. I don't have a problem with that. What I have a problem with is that Angelina is not content to get a count out and announces it, and this is very clearly part of the storyline.
Yeah.
I want to pin Gail Kim.
Right.
Why? Why do you care? All you care about is having the belt, and Taz is earlier saying that the whole thing with the Beautiful People is that they want to have the belt so that they can have control of the locker room of five. Right. Which makes some sense. Like, that's logically consistent. So then why wouldn't Angelina, who has to know in the back of her head that she's not good enough to beat Gail Kim, that's part of the story here, like, or should be part of the story here. I don't know. I found it weird.
Needing to pin somebody is
she
a babyface thing.
Yeah, right. She should have said that backstage where it's like, no, I'm going to pin you. Where, like, you have a hubris element to it. This is a very...
You have pride about
pride.
It. I need to pin you. This is what's going on.
But this is just introduced really, really late, and it's not consistent with the way that the beautiful people generally operate, which is win by any means necessary. So, Angelina gets Gail back into the ring. It turns out she can only get a two count. She gets Gail for another Botox injection, but this time, Gail catches the foot as it's coming in, throws down the foot, gets eat defeat, 1-2-3, clean in the ring, your new Knockouts champion, Gail Kim.
Right. Finally. I mean, now just get her some challengers, and we're good.
You know what's funny? They said it was her fourth time, and I was like, really? She's only been champion three times, and Angelina has been champion six?
Yeah.
Good Lord. All right. Maybe there's a great Angelina match I haven't seen. If one of y'all are listening and you want to make that case for Angelina, why she is better, I am welcome to hear it. All right. Kurt Angle is backstage, and he says, and I quote, "It's been a busy good."
He does say that.
It's been a busy good.
They're like, well, how do you think it's been? Oh, it's been a busy good.
It's been a busy good.
I don't know exactly.
I don't know what that means. I like it. It sounds fun.
He should say that like every week now.
We have a busy good for you tonight.
Yeah.
It has been a busy good. That might even be how I sign off today. So next week, all the belts are going to be on the line, which is cool. Not if you're in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, because this week only the Knockout title was on the line. Oh, actually, no, I'm sorry. They got to see a world title match here coming up. I even forget that this is a world title match. It just, they didn't do the ring announcement. There's a number of things that didn't make this even feel like a credible match. Because up next, we've got Eric Young versus Bobby Lashley, but they didn't do the official introduction with Jeremy Borash, you know, saying this is a world title match, introducing the challenger, introducing the champion, and really making it seem like Eric Young had a chance.
Right.
It just never felt like that. And I mean, you know, I'm not even talking with a knowledge of what's going forward here. I'm actually trying to read as few of the spoilers as I can, you know, while still being somewhat informed, so I can have some of the, you know, fun of watching this product fresh, or the perspective of watching this product fresh. But it never felt like Eric Young was even, like, close to winning this match. And this match goes a similar way as all the Eric Young matches have gone, and Eric Young didn't bother to mention, which is that Eric Young is either injured going into the match or gets injured sometime during the match to lose the match or gets screwed. In this case, we initially have Bobby Roode and MVP out there, and they're trying to cheat, and then Earl Hebner throws out Bobby Roode and MVP.
Right, and that wasn't... Once again, this was another spot where Kurt Angle should have been... If you're going to do it once, you have to show some consistency. And even if you're going to say that, okay, he was just doing it to the heels, well, then in this case, he should have thrown out at least MVP. And in the last one, he should have at least thrown out Velvet Sky.
And why has Kurt Angle not noticed that people have been, like, doing gimmicky type things all night when they're coming out ringside?
Right.
He's too busy talking about how busy good it's been. How it's been a busy good.
It's been good busy.
Yeah. It's good to be busy, my friend.
It's been busy good busy.
So this match starts off with Eric Young kind of in control. It's like 60-40. Mostly Eric Young. It looks like Eric Young's got the upper hand. And then Bobby Lashley hits Eric Young with a clubbing blow to send Eric Young from the top ropes to the outside, where Eric Young sells a tweaking of the ankle or a rolling of the ankle or some sort of
lower leg injury.
Like leg/heel injury, like lower calf injury. And then we get Bobby Lashley. He goes outside. He is sweating hard, but he starts taking control, does, you know, leg work, lots of leg work. We get a horrible looking leg, Bobby Lashley leg hole thing.
What do you think was going on there?
I don't know. Like, is that like some sort of MMA move that I'm not familiar? Because it doesn't.
No, it's not at all.
Because just leverage wise, it looks like Eric Young can turn left or turn right and force Bobby Lashley to do something.
Right.
And, like, to have to make some sort of adjustment that would give Eric Young the positioning he needs to get to the ropes. And I was expecting Bobby Lashley to put on a half crab.
Or some something of, to that effect. Yeah, right.
Some sort of decent, you know.
He ends up just holding on to it and kind of lackadaisically. Doesn't really do a whole lot to it. And the
Taz
odd thing
is left trying to put over the fact that Bobby Lashley's an MMA guy,
right,
and a submission specialist, and if he gets you in a heel. By the way,
honest,
I thought Taz did a pretty decent job from beginning to end on this week's episode.
He did. He did a lot of, like, and he was funny. He did some really funny, like,
the
Fourth of July jokes here and there.
The Fourth of July
stuff
jokes
like
were
that.
Good. There's a number. Taz was very funny. I enjoyed actually Tanae and Taz very much on this show. In a way.
But the thing is. After I watched this and everything, I actually started looking up some of the Bobby Lashley MMA matches because I hadn't watched them. I apologize for that. I don't know
MMA
a ton of it.
MMA just doesn't do that much for me. Yeah.
Evidently, the dude knows his stuff. Like, he actually got in and submitted some guys. He's got a good record. He's never been submitted. Like, the guy was pretty good. I watched a little bit of tape on him and stuff like that. Like, he's... And that's why this is mind-boggling to me, because he wouldn't just hold the guy, knowing that he knows these clinches, these clutches, you know, all the different ways to, like, kind of grab somebody. And if he's got the foot, there's a lot more that he could have done with it. So there's got to be something that was going on there. There was something missed. Somebody called it wrong, or I don't know.
Dude, Bobby, just turn it over to a half crab. That's where I thought
at some point
we were going.
You should have just let it go then, or something.
Also, it does kind of boggle my mind that he is, quote, a submission specialist and doesn't have a better-looking submission at his disposal than this.
Yeah, that really drives me nuts now, too. It's like he thought that EY was going to get to the ropes.
Yeah, I don't know. It was confusing. So, anyways, EY starts getting his hope spots. We get a bit of an EY comeback, but EY is still favoring the, like, leg, ankle region and having issues walking around and putting some weight on that. So EY is able to knock Bobby Lashley from the top ropes and get his elbow drop that he likes to try to finish off some matches with. And he hits the elbow drop. It's only able to get a two count. So EY, realizing that he is going to need more than just that elbow drop, is going to try for the pile driver. He goes to pick up Bobby Lashley for the pile driver, but is not able to put the weight on the ankle. And that gives Bobby Lashley the opportunity to set up Eric Young for a spear. And he measures out Eric Young and kind of goes from corner to corner to corner, measuring out Eric Young. And when Eric Young turns around, he receives the running bus. A lot of people with spears in this company now.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of people with... They look good. I mean, you can never go against Rhino's spear. You can't go against... I mean, Bobby Lashley's spear looks really good. That hunting sequence, though, the camera
like
guys and everything, everybody did a good job on that, because they changed camera angles twice on it so that you could follow behind him, and they did a really good job of setting up that whole thing, because he just hit him with a decent little slam and then just measured him for a good, minute 15, I don't know.
I wouldn't say this was a good match, but in terms of Bobby Lashley's matches and the matches that Bobby Lashley has had so far in this company, I thought that he seems like he's more comfortable in this role. There seemed like there were moments where Bobby Lashley will probably be okay in this role. I the jury's still out. He could totally flop, and that wouldn't surprise me either. But I just saw little glimpses of a guy who was actually kind of in the character towards the end of this match.
Yeah.
And I like that. It's interesting to just think about where the Lashley program will go through the summer here.
Right, especially with all the nice little setups, the Aries setup, the Rude possible setup, all that neat stuff. There, if he just goes through and fights all of the big names, that's going to be a crazy... There's some good matches to be had.
And you know the key thing? My counter this week, zero. That's the number of times Bobby Lashley talked, and he needs to keep not saying a damn word. Let MVP talk for him. Everything's going to be all right.
Yeah. It looks better and better in the ring, so yeah.
It's coming together. Not a bad episode. I'm looking forward to these New York tapings, and I look forward to talking about them with you and our first guest, hopefully here in the next 2 weeks. So, are there any final notes before we wrap the show?
No, if we could have just had a little more Bobby Roode.
Yeah, no, Bobby Roode probably could have done a backstage segment where he talked to Gail Kim and congratulated her on becoming Knockouts champion.
At least.
Something to that effect. I think that would have been really good. All right, so I think that's a wrap for the show. If you want to call and leave a voicemail, you can dial 920-7100-TNA, 920-7100-TNA, 920-7100-TNA. You can follow me on Twitter at CHRISNOVEMBRINO. You can email the show at talktodrnove@gmail.com. You can, I think that's it. You follow Voices of Wrestling, go to voicesofwrestling.com. Dylan Hales always puts out a great TNA Impact review, and we won't be doing one next week, but Dylan Hales certainly will be, and he'll be on this program at some point as well. And I want to thank the guys over at Voices of Wrestling for, you know, having us on the show. We love having us on their website. We love being here. It's a lot of fun. Thank you all for listening, and until the next one, cheers.